Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So what have you done to your hair?
I have cut my own hair today.
Why?
Well, why? Because I hate hairdressers for starters. And okay,
probably not a good reason, not a good enough reason to cut your own hair.
The other thing is, you know, as your hairline changes and you get a bit older, you've got a few choices. You can cover it up, or you can get rid of your hair completely, which is what you've opted for.
Look, to be fair, I didn't really have much of a choice. I didn't need to shave it off. I had to shave it off.
But you could have left like Krusty the Clown flyaways, you know. Some people do that, like a mad professor sort of look. You've gone for the sleek aerodynamic look. And what I'm trying to do is retain my hair, but just, you know, work with the hairline that is changing over time, I think. And I wanted to go for like a, you know, I think Liam Gallagher's really aged quite well.
Aged quite well?
Yeah. Well, okay. You know, but he's had some wacky haircuts over the years, but at the moment he's got this like short mod look. So I looked at a picture of Liam Gallagher. I looked up how to do a short mod on YouTube, and then I stood in my bath with a pair of scissors and I went for it.
With a mirror?
Yeah, there's a big mirror, and then I got a little hand mirror as well.
This just sounds like a really bad idea. And look, on the on the internet here, it looks not bad.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it looks like in real life.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'll see it one day, don't worry, and then you can – the full criticism can come through. Should we get on with the show?
Yeah, let's.
All right. Do you want to hear my theme music?
I can't wait.
I've made it for us. Here we go.
Hit me. Can you feel it? Oh, yeah. Alexia. Okay, that is pretty awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was up all night.
I appreciate this. I approve. I approve of this theme song.
Okay, good. I really wanted to hammer home the, like, pull in as many 90s cliches as I could find or think of. So, you know.
I love a 90s cliche. Oh. I am a 90s cliche, so I love that. That was perfect. It was right up my alley. I'd have brought that. I'd have brought Hit Machine 13 just because that song was on there.
Well, I'm flattered. So, actually, while we're on who you are, who are you?
So I am Alexander.
And I'm Alex.
And this is Fruity Alexia, episode 1. Welcome, listeners, to our very first episode, our foray into podcasting.
Yeah. And what are we actually doing?
Great question.
What are we actually going to talk about?
Great question. So, you know, a recap show, really, about a pop culture from a simpler time. You know, we're going to watch a show that is near and dear to our teenage hearts. And I think actually a lot of Australians' teenage hearts as well. The original and I think seminal era-defining reality series, the original series of Pop Stars Australia.
How exciting. I think the, yeah, I don't know exactly how we came about this idea, but it, I think it was because I was watching YouTube drunk on gin late one night.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
And I just, you know, I came across this series again and I think I watched it all the way through beginning to end and just, you know, remembered how much I loved it, but also just quite shocked about how much has changed, particularly around like the format of reality TV, you know.
Sure. I mean, it was the first, really the first reality television program in a lot of ways, certainly, you know, in a way, I guess, a forebearer for a lot of reality programs that we know now, certainly music reality programs.
Yeah. And you can see little germs of how it all started in there. And some things they get rid of, some things they cling onto. And I'm sure we'll talk about it all coming up. But before we do that, who the dickens are we? So I scripted that line particularly to include the word dickens.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. My name's Alex Hui. H-O-U-Y, but for the first 36 years of my life, I was Alex Dick, D-I-C-K. But I'm sure you can all appreciate why, you know, I got married and took my wife's name.
not because it was Dick, but because you're a traditional, you're a modern day romantic.
Exactly.
No, you know what? So for the first 36 years of your life, your surname was Dick.
Yep.
For the first 36 years of mine, I've been a Dick. My name is Alexander Jenkins. I don't have any fun puns, I'm afraid. Jenkins doesn't really lend itself to much.
No, it's true. Yeah, it doesn't even really rhyme with anything.
Not really.
No, I mean
Jerkins. I used to get Jerkins a little bit in school. Okay,
I was wondering, yeah.
Well, it's not that good though. It's kind of lame.
Yeah. It's not like Dick, is it? You can have a field.
Well, there's nothing quite like Dick.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, I'll let that one pass.
I mean, you don't have to tell me.
So I guess we have known each other for... I've even lost count of how many years.
Yeah, 100 years.
Yeah, I suspect we went to primary school together, but I didn't really know you then. I do have this image of you and your sister sort of walking through the playground, you know, like a little row of ducks with some other student in front of you. And it was like literally in height order of you, your sister, and maybe it was even your bigger sister at the other end. I can't quite remember, but...
Possibly.
Yeah, walking around the little oval there. Yeah.
Well, we did go to primary school together, but we weren't friends in primary school. We were in different split classes. You know, there were year five and six classes.
Mm.
I don't know why.
Yeah, but we sort of only really got to know each other in high school and more specifically, we got to know each other while we were doing musicals in high school.
That's right, while we were tripping the light fantastic with other teenage thespians of the day.
Exactly. And bless them
all. Some of which who have gone on to become absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and I think we're included in that, are we?
Here we are recording Fruity Alexia. So is that nothing? I'm not sure. Exactly. You tell us, listeners.
Yeah, and remember, if you're listening to this episode, you were here from the beginning. So you're going to be, you know, in 20 years' time when you're, you know, looking at signed pictures of us, you'll remember this very first episode where we're introducing
ourselves. Absolutely
right.
And, you know, we kind of been nothing, just like those other thespians that have amounted to nothing.
Exactly.
Here we are and you're listening to us instead of listening to them. So thank you
for
validating our existence.
I can safely say for me, up until now, pretty much nothing. But, you know, I have worked... I've worked quite a bit in theatre backstage and I've done a bit of like media production stuff as well. So, you know, podcasting seemed quite natural, even though, you know, I really don't like, you know, we're potentially filming this for later use. We'll see if that happens or not. But I don't really love being on camera, but I'm going to get over it just because, you know, I like to be in a room, albeit a virtual room, with you talking about 90s TV.
Look, Alex is underselling himself, I think. You know, he's worked at the Royal Opera House in London. He's worked at the Sydney Opera House in Australia.
In Sydney.
He's worked for in Sydney.
Yeah.
And he's worked for a number of, you know, really cool, important theatre companies and television network. So he's underselling himself, but that's fine. That's his thing. And I'll oversell myself.
Here we go.
I'm
just going to take a little break, listeners, while we do this segment.
Yeah, probably. Go if you need to go for a wee, go now.
Yeah.
And come back when I've finished. I am a failed actress. There is no other way to put it, really, is there? I mean, pretty much I had a, you know, I had a very successful career as an extra for a very long time.
Exactly. And you shouldn't, you know, put yourself down about that, because what would Neighbours be without all the background actors in it?
You jest.
It would just be two models standing in an empty room.
It would be. It would be so boring. Yeah. And you know what? I like to think of myself as having contributed to many years of Australian television, you know, legacy in a way of Neighbours.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I basically did a lot of extras work and voiceovers and a whole bunch of different things. And
yeah, and you're friends with Aggro as well, aren't you?
I've met Aggro. I reckon Aggro is probably somebody that I probably was most starstruck by, actually. Probably Aggro.
All right.
It was pretty cool. I kind of freaked out a little bit. Aggro was pretty awesome.
Was it the person or the puppet itself that freaked you out?
It was the puppet. I had a photo with him, and I met the person too. I was less impressed by the person. But the puppet was really, really cool. You know, for anybody who used to watch his morning television program, Aggro's Cartoon Connection, it was really cool to meet him and have a photo with him. It was really, really cool. And, I mean, you know, I'm rarely starstruck by people. That's not true. I'm starstruck by everybody. You know, anybody. If there's somebody walking into the supermarket, I'll just be like, get my phone out, take a photo of them, like, if I can part, you know,
yeah.
If
I'm in like someone famous, you mean, not just random strangers.
No, not regular people, boring. But if it's somebody even remotely famous, if I'm in sort of the greengrocer section, I'll like, you know, part or like the herbs or like the green leaves and just sort of take a photo through my Woolworths.
Okay, so Popstars Australia. We think filmed in 1999 and aired in 2000, going off the very thoroughly researched Wikipedia page, I believe.
That's what we think, yeah.
Yeah. So what was the series actually about?
So it was already a series. Popstars was already a series in New Zealand, and it had formed a girl band in New Zealand. And then the show was bought in Australia by Screen Time. And it was kind of like a collaboration between the Seven Network, who were going to air it. New Idea Magazine ran the actual ads for the auditions, and Warner Music and Grant Thomas Management. So Warner Music were the people who were going to offer the record contract, and Grant Thomas Management were, at the time, a really important management company for musical acts in Australia. They had Human Nature were probably their biggest you know, act at the time.
Yeah, and so why are we? When I threw this idea of rewatching Popstars at you, why? What made you excited about it?
I mean, I said a little bit earlier, you know, pop culture from a simpler time. I think I, like a lot of people, probably reflect on these things and think, you know, it seemed like everything seemed little bit more innocent. You know, pop stars and early reality television, particularly. You know, this is before social media.
Yeah.
You know, those people, they were genuine nobodies when they joined those shows. And, you know, they auditioned with the very best intent. Perhaps they did want to get famous, but they really did audition to be pop stars at that time. Whereas now you've got a whole bunch of different reality programs and people really just join up to be famous. Some of them are genuine. I don't want to discredit everybody, but generally as a rule of thumb, you do get that kind of flavor for these people that join these shows. They've got a lot of Botox, they've had a lot of filler, they've had a lot of work done, they've already got a huge following on social media. That's partly how they get cast on these shows.
Right.
Whereas back in, you know, 1999, 2000, you know, these young people auditioning for Popstars Australia, they really wanted to be pop stars. You know, the Spice Girls had only been around for 3 years or something at this point, and they were the biggest thing in the world. And it was a huge, huge carrot that was dangled in front of these people. So, you know, if there's anything for us to really pick out of that time from 20 years ago, Popstars, we would be remiss not to talk about it.
It's true. And it was a very erudite answer indeed, of course. But I think when I asked you, what I really wanted to segue into was your CD collection from the time and maybe some posters that maybe you had on your wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
How many CD singles do you think you had?
At the time, probably about 300. I spent all of my pocket money. I used to walk out to Brash's. Those of you who don't know what CDs are, they used to be sold in shops, and they played music. You put them into your CD player, your stereo.
Yeah.
And I used to walk out to Brash's with my pocket money and I would put CD singles on lay-by and they were like $9.95 at the
really?
Time. That was so, yeah, $9.95. And I used to put them on lay-by and I loved them so much. And I would, you know, I would listen to all of the remixes and I thought it was super cool and I loved them so much. So probably we had about 300.
How many shelves did it take up, do you reckon?
Oh, I had one of those really big, ugly, white laminate corner desks
yeah.
that people probably listening will be familiar with from back in the day.
Yeah.
And I reckon it probably filled the whole thing, okay. those CDs.
Yeah. Was it like Kmart standard issue, bought at the Salvos?
Probably
yeah.
then it wasn't. Kmart, I don't think it was Kmart at the time, but probably basically these days it would be Kmart. It was before IKEA, put it that way.
Yeah. Now we've come up with a name for this, Fruity Alexia. I'm hoping people get the pun. I mean, we're both called Alex.
So that's kind of the pun, really.
Yeah, exactly. And then...
I mean, I felt like we were trying to think about, you know, what is something that was camp and funny and silly from 20 years ago that, you know, we really liked or that was really embarrassing, really, and
yeah.
kind of spoke
it's,
to that.
It's got that element of trash as well.
It
I
really
think,
does the, have that element
you know,
of trash.
The cask
and, you know, you think about drinking cask yeah. wine, Fruity Alexia, you can't go past it. And, you know, Alex and Alexander, Fruity Alexia,
yeah.
why the hell not? At least 50% of us is fruity and it's not the gay half.
yeah. Are we going to leave that cryptic for now?
sure. Yeah.
okay.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. We don't need to out anyone on the first
that's
episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
We don't out people here.
No, exactly. Yeah.
unless you pay.
Okay.
If you pay, we out people.
Yeah. On the Patreon.
yeah.
if we do end up doing that anyway.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But before we do that, I want to know, what does this sound do to you? It's quite long, but it would be sacrilege to cut it out now. Let's just play it out to the end.
I can't even tell you what that just did to me. It's so weird that a song where the lyrics are literally do 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 and ba ba do I? It's so weird that that ignites a flame within me, like it does.
Yeah, what's exciting is, you know, just the theme songs were something back then because the TV would just be on, and so you're listening out for things like that as your cue to, this is my program, this is my program, and then like running to, you know, be all excited and find out what happens that week.
Well, I don't know if it was just us, but in, you know, over in America and stuff, they had DVR recordings. You know, they could record television way earlier than we could. And the only way that I think, you know, we could really record television was if you had a VHS tape in the actual machine and you pressed record when the show came on, and the TV had to stay on the channel to record the program and all that sort of stuff. You know, if you missed it, you know, you missed it. And when that theme song used to play, I think it was a Sunday night the show aired, maybe 7 o'clock, 6:30 or something on a Sunday night. When that song would play, it would, you know, it would just freak me out and freak my sisters out, and we would race at the TV. It was so exciting. It was such a big deal that pop stars were starting. It was so exciting. And everyone watched. You know, everybody was tuning in. It was something like, at the time, you know, 2.5 million people at its peak in Australia were watching that show.
Whoa.
It was rating higher than Friends.
Really?
It was rating higher than Friends' first run episodes at that time.
Suck on that, Monica.
Yeah, suck on that. so it was at that time, it was a huge deal here.
Yeah. So I was definitely one of those, you know, 2.5 million people. And yeah, we're gonna go through episode one today, I think, and just break down what actually happened and, you know, relive some of the excitement. So I thought I'd just do a quick, like, scene by scene what happens, so we can get that out of the way and talk about actually what's going on in the show, you know.
Sure.
The between the lines part of it. So anyway, the opening montage, episode one, it sets the scene straight away. We meet the judges first, Jackie O, who doesn't seem to have aged at all. I don't know if she has a portrait of herself in the attic or something that is aging for her.
she was beautiful then, and she's beautiful now.
Or maybe it's Kyle. Maybe that's why Kyle's aged so badly.
Look, anybody's going to look rough sitting next to Jackie O.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of looking rough next to Jackie O, the next judge is Chris Moss, who's like he seems nice enough, a bit mole man-y maybe, bit of a moustache, but you know.
I don't know. I mean, the moustache, the whole thing, it's a vibe.
Yeah,
it's a look.
It is, isn't it? And it's a very specific look that thankfully for now seems to have disappeared, but who knows, these things tend to come back around. And I can't remember what's his job title.
He's the some kind of head of the Warner Music Australia subsidiary.
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. And then there's Michael Napthali, with, you know, he's supposed to be the cool young whatever with his Britpop mullet and his Hawaiian shirt. And, you know, he's
an absolute arsehole.
Yeah.
He's a straight up arsehole. There's no two ways about it.
That's true.
He hits the ground running with kill, kill, kill in his eyes, really, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
He walks in with the biggest balls, kicking them along the ground.
Yeah.
And he is not afraid to kick them in front of people, I don't think. He is really, really in it in it for blood.
A bit of a fan of himself as well, I think. I mean, you know, we'll talk about all these people a lot more throughout the series.
Yeah, so. Sure.
It's the usual first episode of a reality show, with lineups of contestants and like the bad auditions that we're all supposed to laugh at. Ha, 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 look at those people. They can't sing. They're wearing, you know, eyebrow piercings. But it did remind me that it was the first time that we actually saw this format. Like, it's very rough around the edges, but it's really the first time I ever remember seeing this way of making a television show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was very new at the time, and I think that was part of what made it so exciting for us as people sitting at home watching it. We'd never seen anything like it. It was a really, you know, behind the scenes, fly on the wall style filmed kind of production. And, you know, we had a lot of light entertainment variety programs in Australia, but they were all in studios and they were all camera A, camera B, camera C, that kind of thing. This was really like, it felt like a handycam situation. It felt like people were sort of wearing their cameras on rigs.
Exactly. Like the news crew had just been sent down to capture
it. Very much. It really had that. It had quite a, you know, breaking news kind of feel, and kind of like almost a crudeness to it. Certainly looking back on it now, it feels really crude, looks really crude to watch, you know, very unpolished, in a way unprofessional, although the Channel 7 logo is splashed everywhere. And
it's true.
Reminds me how much the Channel 7 logo has changed over the years so many times. But yeah, it doesn't really feel super, it does not feel super modern or chic, but at the time it really, really was.
Yeah, blew my mind. So yeah, in episode one, they're just going around Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth and Brisbane doing cattle calls. Didn't go to Hobart. Maybe they knew not to come, or they knew it wouldn't be worth it. But you know, aeroplane tickets were expensive back then on Ansett, so fair enough.
They were.
Yeah.
And they were doing these cattle calls in like hotel function rooms.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a Marriott or a McCure or something. And, you know, they just, you know, they set up a table over in the corner with, you know, an urn with some hot water in it. And
it's funny, isn't it?
Handed you a little container of some, I don't know, Blend 43 Nescafe powdered coffee.
And the little milk with the lid you peel off that you always end up squirting everywhere. Yeah, like something like Australian Idol was only a few years, like a couple of years later, right? And that's like full production, full set, you know, moving lights, screens.
You see, here you go. Here's a little Australian television insight for you. Idol is kind of no different, actually, in those early rounds.
Right.
I say this from personal first-hand experience. They do them in, like, you know, the foyers of, like, the Vodafone Arena or Rod Laver Arena.
From personal and experience. Then, hang on, you need to go back to that. Did I know this?
Because I don't know if you knew it. Maybe you did. But when I went to do Australian Idol, I didn't actually... wasn't the intention to do it, but a girl at school wanted to be the next Britney Spears, and so she wanted to go, and I went with her, and I sort of thought...
A girl as in asking for a friend? Is this what you mean, or actually someone else?
No, really, okay. a girl, a friend of mine, and she was really cute and fun, and she wanted to be the next Britney Spears. She was obsessed with Britney Spears, and I said, sure, I'll come with you, and I really hadn't given it much thought, and anyway, I kind of just decided that actually I would audition, and of course it was, you know... Nothing happened from it. But it was all sort of done in the foyer of what was then Vodafone Arena. I'm not sure what it is now. Maybe it's Hisense Arena, I think, in Melbourne. And then, you know, you did the first cattle call in like the foyer area. It was really weird. And then you went into sort of subdivided kind of conference spaces. It was really, really strange. And you just sort of walked in and there were two people sitting there, two production people, and you just kind of stood on an X and sung your little song. And
yeah.
They told you if they liked you, if they wanted you to fuck off or not. Oh, can I swear? Am I allowed to swear on this? Or do we get a different rating?
Swear away. Let's swear away.
Fuck, yeah, it's up to us. Fuck. Yep. There you go. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't know we had like on-the-ground reporting handy for this. This is adds a whole new dimension. How exciting. I've never done anything like that, and maybe I'm regretting it now. But I've got my eye on the Great British Bake Off. So.
There's still hope for you yet. You and Mary Berry together at last on television.
I'd love that. Oh, I love Mary Berry.
Yeah,
anyway,
I love her too. We digress.
Yeah, back to the episode. So this was my quick blurb before we get into the nuts and bolts of the podcast. So it's going well so far. I'm so pithy. And then they go on to do the auditions. You know, the judges give a few like yes or no answers. You know, there's just a few of them standing up and they sing a bar and a half and the judges go no, no. And some of them, it's all very quick. They barely get... you know, two lines out and they're done. You know, there's a bit more of the cattle call stuff and they get into the round two. And then the judges, I think it's Michael Napfali, he sort of ends by saying he's just surprised by how many people have turned up who just can't sing at all. which, you know, for reality TV these days, that's actually what you want is for people to turn up not being able to sing, because that's the bit that everyone tunes in for at the beginning of the series. And then it sort of ends on a hissy fit from this one contestant who gets knocked out because basically she's forgotten her lines. And then just because I think Chris Moss has a bit of a thing against her, adds that she couldn't really move very well. So she gets booted out because of that. But I feel like, you know, she gets sort of captured on, you know, on VHS tape, I guess, having this hissy fit in front, you know, with the audition that's being, you know, cast live to the nation. And I feel like maybe she didn't quite realize, and I don't know if anyone really realized what this whole reality TV was going to become. And I almost felt like she was the sort of first victim of reality TV that I can remember, at least.
She was either the first victim or the first bad apple of reality TV.
Yeah. She doesn't...
She had a shit attitude.
She did, didn't she? She doesn't from the beginning come out of it looking very good.
Yeah, she fluffed her lines and she fluffed her lyrics, which is ridiculous in its first place, but she also just had a shit attitude. Hey, 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 hey. Okay, so the one thing that I noticed was that they were really just singing the same songs. There was maybe, I don't know, five or six, maybe seven different songs that they were singing that they all had to audition and perform. One of them was My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion, which of course was huge. What's Love Got to Do with It by Tina Turner?
It's a good question, Tina.
It is a great question.
Yeah.
And what was another one that they were doing? Oh, Ain't No Sunshine.
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Zig Zig Bar. Right. And she says, they keep getting it wrong. Zig Zig Bar, Zig Zig Boo.
Zig Zig Bar. The girl that says Zig Zig Bar, what kind of a rock were you living under? Wannabe was like 3 years earlier. How can you not know it's Zig Zig R?
Yeah.
Also, why would that even be an audition song? It is such, I mean, look, I know it's a great song.
Yeah.
It's not even a song that's sung.
It's not like you can, you can't really belt it out. Like half of it's sort of spoken, so.
It's mostly spoken.
Yeah.
And there is barely one note sung between all five of the Spice Girls in that song.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's a really strange song to have. But of course, I guess it plays into the whole girl group thing.
Yeah, and you get to know all the songs very, very, at least two bars of all the songs very, very really well do. By the end of episode one.
You get to hear the same bit over and over again. You're like, okay, I get it. By that point, though, I think, by 1999, 2000, we'd all been, been beaten to death by My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion and Wannabe by the Spice Girls. It was weird, though, that they did the Ain't No Sunshine When He's Gone thing. That was strange.
Yeah. You had some theory.
It wasn't a cover of it. It was weird.
Yeah. I'm sure we were talking earlier and you said you had some theory. It was about what was licensed by Warner at the time.
Yeah. My presumption is just that it was the cheaper, when they're going to spend all that money on Wannabe and they're going to spend all this money on What's Love Got to Do with It and Celine Dion, I presume it was just one of the various songs that they had available to them at that time.
Right, yeah. Bill Withers had got them on the phone and gone, hey, I'm having trouble paying my rent. Can you chuck my song into the... Alexia. So anyway, that's what roughly happened. But what's most interesting about any TV and any drama is the characters, of course. So, who did we meet? So I've already talked a bit about the judges. Did you have any thoughts on those three?
I did. I mean, I think the thing is, you make a good point about the characters. This was so early on in reality television that it was before producers really did, assign character roles and narratives and story arcs to reality television people. I mean, nowadays the villain is so obvious and all the complicated sort of, narratives are kind of figured out ahead of time and they're edited in. People are produced to perform to a certain character narrative. This was very early on in reality television, so that doesn't really happen here, but certainly you can kind of get a bit of an idea just by who these people are. The judges, I think, at the time I understand why, they were chosen. It's still quite strange, though, when you look back at it. And I was reading an article recently that Jackie O, it was an article that I was reading about Jackie O that had a couple of quotes from her that she herself had said on her own radio program where she agreed to do the show because she was a presenter on the Oz Stereo radio network, but that she wasn't even paid for the show. She was actually just paid a per diem every day. So she received an envelope with $60 or something in it, which was, her lunch money kind of thing.
Wow.
But she wasn't actually paid any more money for the program, which is just so weird when you think about it.
So she's still running away every day to go and do her breakfast show or whatever she was doing at the time. All right.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of explains why she turns up in sort of flip-flops and a bag over her shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
Every day.
She's brushed her hair in the car just before.
She has.
Yeah.
And, she's sort of drinking instant coffee, the poor love. It's not like somebody's running around getting her a, almond soy latte or something. She's drinking a little... Nescafe instant coffee.
Oh, bless
them. I think it was also so early on where, judges didn't really have pre-aligned or predetermined characters either. Australian Idol or American Idol or X Factor or The Voice or any of those shows. The judges have a predetermined character to play.
Yeah.
This was kind of so early on and so crude that really it was just three industry people making a decision.
Yeah, it's almost like it is more like a documentary. Like, we're going to put on this competition and we're going to stick the camera crew there, and whatever happens, happens. And it does feel like those three are there particularly for their, you know, their roles within the company rather than their presence on the camera, which is probably totally. Why they got Jackie O, because she, you know, she does have presence, and the other two,
I assume,
leave a little to be desired.
That's right. I mean, I assume at the time, sure, it makes sense to have a radio personality on there, but it certainly doesn't hurt that she's beautiful and young. And, you know, you're absolutely right. They did need some kind of a personality and presence, because they weren't going to get it from a middle-aged man with a moustache.
Yeah.
And I think Michael Napthalai was wearing his personality in his Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah. And she's the one that sort of feels conscious about the fact that there are cameras there.
Oh, yeah.
The other two are just, the other two are just happy to, you know, tear people apart in front of everyone. And she, you can feel sometimes in the periphery she's there, like, managing what the audience are going to think about what's happening on camera.
Yeah, well, I think that's partly because she's the only one out of the three of the judges that's talent.
Yeah.
I mean, that was her first time on television as far as I'm aware. And I think, you know, she, when you're talent versus somebody in production, I think you have a different appreciation or understanding of what should or shouldn't be done or said or shown. Whereas the other guys, you know, they just had, the other judges, they just had their own careers and they were just doing this because they had to. There was money in it for them. There was no money in this for her. You know, that's the reality. Yeah. Their roles, they were going to make money in their actual jobs from whoever this band was going to be.
Yeah.
Jackie O, poor love, she was just going to hit play on a record on a radio station. There was no money in this for her, poor thing.
Were the other two getting per diems as well, I wonder?
I presume they probably were from Channel 7.
Yeah. I was trying to work out if I spotted any of the band, because hopefully by now everyone, you know, if you're interested in pop stars, you probably know who actually ends up winning. You know, we'll probably spoil it a bit along the way. So if you're really worried about that, go back and watch it all first. It's on YouTube. But I was trying to see if we could spot any in, like, the opening montage, because I feel like they're at this point they're filming it not knowing who's going to be in the band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's fair.
Maybe we see, like, a quick glimpse of Chantal Barry.
We do. She's the very first one, I think, in the whole episode that we actually see is Chantal Barry.
Yeah, and a bit off-key, do you think?
Very.
Yeah, okay, good. It wasn't just me.
No, upon watching it again, they weren't really that good. Like, in their auditions anyway, put it that way.
Yeah,
in their first auditions.
Yeah. And then Belinda Chappell, I think you see her at the beginning wearing, like, furry glasses or something, and then she does a bit of a, like, she's featured a couple of times, like, singing, and she does some weird, like, I don't know, she sings and sounds fine, but then she does, like, this weird, like, boof, boof, and, like, beats her chest and looks awkwardly at the camera. Strange. I have no idea what that was about.
I wonder if that was the way that her hand kind of moves from her chest or her tummy. I kind of feel like, does she mean her heart's beating out of her chest, like nervous, like, you know, boof, boof, like maybe. I don't know. But I did think, I will say, you know, about Belinda Chappell, I did think she was fairly strong as an audition in that first episode. You know, what we see, I'm just assuming, was the only audition all of them did, because it's so crudely done. I can't imagine them saying, can you do it again for TV? Can you do it again for the cameras?
Totally.
It feels like, well, whatever they got and they used.
Yeah.
In terms of footage.
Yeah. There's something endearing about it, though, because I think, you know, if this was America, I think you wouldn't get those little moments, because everyone turns up ready to, you know, have their Hollywood career laid out in front of them. But there was something nice about just little moments like that where you see the guard drop and, like, it just made me go, oh, yeah, this is definitely a little Australian kind of thing. And then, you know, of course, we see Sophie Monk, who people are probably still familiar with to this day. Did you know this is where she started out, before she was on Beauty and the Geek?
Before she was everything else.
And they sort of, what do they say?
Oh, yeah, Chris Moss, I think, makes a comment about her vibrato being so pronounced.
My question about that was, at the time, and you're the right person to ask, I think, was she playing someone like Marilyn Monroe at Warner Brothers Movie World on the Gold Coast?
That's right, yeah. So she was a trained opera singer, like, I think maybe, maybe not trained opera singer, but she was training to be an opera singer. So that's perhaps why her vibrato was so pronounced. And she was working at Movie World as Marilyn Monroe.
Who famously had a pretty wide vibrato as well. And then we also see Katie, who, I don't know, what did you think of Katie when she pops onto screen?
Great question. I am a long-term fan. I'm a long-term Katie Underwood stan. I think she's great. I think she was so ahead of her time at the time that she was auditioning for pop stars. And I think, weirdly, in a way, she got sort of dealt a raw deal, really, from the whole thing. But I thought she was so cool. And, you know, she turns up for this very, very first audition, and she's got the narrator kind of says, oh, Katie Underwood from, I don't know, Melbourne, bought her outfit in London and she's hoping it will impress the judges.
That was good. You should do voiceovers or a podcast.
Thank you. I've heard that before. I'm busy with a podcast at the moment, but good. Do let me know in the future. I was thinking, well, actually, she's probably not hoping the outfit impresses the judges. She's here for a singing competition. She's probably hoping her singing does, but fine, cool, because she's in something kind of crazy and fun, which is, you know, like this metallic mirrored crop toppy bustier thing.
Yeah, it's like nothing I've ever seen before or since.
No. Yeah. I remember people wearing that, you know, they would – people in Melbourne, you know, they would be like fire twirlers in Fitzroy Gardens at nighttime, you know, drinking really cheap vodka out of drink bottles in the
Fruity
park.
Lexia.
Drinking Fruity Lexia or Passion Pop and spinning, you know, fire twirling and doing all sorts of crazy shit in Fitzroy Gardens and stuff at nighttime. So I do remember that rave look. And, you know, she had short cropped hair and it was a fairly androgynous look, which was so different to every other girl that we were seeing who was, you know, super, super feminine, you know, and a lot of them were in crop tops and singlet tops and thin little spaghetti straps and hipster jeans, you know, with, you know, this was the time of jeans when the pockets were embroidered with some kind of hideous sort of floral henna design or studded with some kind of awful little, you know, stud or, you know, stars or whatever. So Katie Underwood kind of presented this really different package, I think, to them. And then they weirdly say to her, go and we like you, but go and buy more clothes and come back.
Yeah. And it's like, don't go and buy something expensive. Go and buy something like go down to Target and get shorts and a T-shirt.
That's
and,
what I thought was so strange. Chris Moss says to her, we like you. Can you come back and do another audition in a different outfit? But don't spend too much money. But come back and you know, we'd love to see you again.
Yeah.
And no sooner has she turned around and she's gone, yep, she's turned around, she's walked off. He then looks at the others and goes, her voice wasn't that strong.
Yeah.
Wasn't that strong yesterday, the other one goes.
Yeah, yesterday she couldn't sing at all. And now
it's like, so then why are you keeping her around? Although I disagree entirely because I actually think she's a great voice.
Yeah. But and funnily enough, out of all of the whole series, that's pretty much the one bit I remember is her first coming in. So she was clearly doing something right because that's just stuck in my head for 20 odd years. Yeah.
And I also think the other thing too is, you know, I remember at the time, and maybe we'll touch on this a bit later on.
Yeah.
You know, that androgynous look that Katie Underwood presented in that first audition, you know, I think it really did pigeonhole and kind of brand her in a way that made her a challenge to market, I think.
Right.
You know, this was a time when, you know, it was, you know, it was such an unusual look, I think, on a woman in a young woman in you know, auditioning to be in an Australian girl band.
And on TV, you know.
And on TV, you know, cropped sort of reddish auburn hair and, you know, this really funky kind of flared, low slung pants, but flared legs and this kind of weird kind of mirrored vest thing. I don't really think they knew what to do with her, and I think maybe she was a little bit of a victim of circumstance and time.
Oh, totally. And she'd just come back from London as well. I'm sure, you know, they're always a few years ahead of us in some ways.
Sure, just a bit.
Yeah. Who else did we see anyone else from the band? I think you get a shot of Tiffany Wood sort of, you know, and she absolutely nails it, I reckon, out of everyone.
You see her very quickly. Yep.
Yeah, and have I missed someone?
I think you see Sally. You see Sally Polaronis as well. A little bit earlier.
I never remember her. I can never remember what she looks like or who she is.
I'm sure. Don't really know what to say to that.
Yeah, I'll Google. I'll Google image search her afterwards.
She's It's not a great first audition.
Yeah.
It's certainly not one of the worst, but it's not a great first audition. I'll agree with that for sure.
And then there's a whole bunch of people auditioning who we don't – we follow a few of them through the audition process, you know. But, you know, a few kind of stuck out. And as I was watching it, I was like, oh, yes, I do remember this person. And,
I was surprised about that too. I was really shocked that, you know, some of these people haven't got on to do anything, but I remembered them auditioning in like one episode of this one show 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Crazy to remember them.
Actually, someone that really stuck out in that specific way, I think, is Dorothy Gatuba.
Oh,
yeah.
Dorothy.
Don't we love Dorothy?
We love Dorothy Gatuba. Beautiful Kenyan Dorothy Gatuba, who was at the time studying at the University of Wollongong, doing something like law and, I don't know, commerce or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what they were saying, I think, wasn't it?
She sings away. Yeah, I think so. And she's got beautiful voice, obviously, and they make a big deal of her being quite shy, which actually I didn't think when she was singing, like she was just standing there singing. You know, a few of the other girls went the other direction and went too brash and started like going and rubbing themselves against the judges in their auditions. And I think she just chose to stand there and sing, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually thought when you watch it, when you actually look at a face and they kind of say, oh, are you quite nervous? Are you quite shy or something? I was kind of thinking, she's not really.
Yeah.
You just are saying that.
Prodding her for the cameras.
It's weird. Yeah. Like, I don't think that's actually what's happening. I think she's just like, here's my performance.
Yeah. And did we hear more of Dorothy Gatuba? Didn't we? Because I looked her up and she's doing something really impressive now that I've completely forgotten.
That's all right.
Yeah.
We did hear a little bit more of her in the series, I think. But since then, she's gone off back to Kenya and she is now the head of Netflix Africa. African content for Netflix, and she's was, you know, one of the top 50 women in film and television in Africa, and one of the twice she's been in the top 40 women under 40.
All right.
In Africa, and so she's gone and, you know, been this incredible, you know, tour de force back home in Kenya for film and women in film, telling, you know, amazing stories.
So we don't have to be too disappointed that she doesn't get into the band.
Absolutely not. No, Dorothy Gatuba sitting in a mansion in Kenya thinking back in this time, laughing at them.
I'll say she's done better than everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Can you imagine? She's working with Netflix. How cool is that?
Yeah.
If I were Dorothy Gatuba, I would buy the rights to this show and I would put it on just to embarrass everybody else.
That's a great idea. I might send her my CV, actually.
I think you should.
Yeah. And then we've got Reggae Hill, who she's another contestant.
Oh, bless.
Yeah, I really like Reggae. Very sweet. She's got a very 90s sort of dreadlocky.
Yeah, red dreadlocks.
Red dreadlocks.
Or braids or something.
Yeah, whatever it is. And it doesn't really, I don't know if it suits her, but it was the thing to do at
the
time.
Not super flattering. No, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Perhaps Reggae will even agree with you. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
she was doing her thing.
It was very of the time. I think you're quite fair in saying that. And also, you know, she also is perhaps the best example of how eyebrows looked at the time, which were really, really thin. I mean, girls just plucked their eyebrows going into their lives back in the day in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. In a lot of cases, they looked like they'd just ripped them off entirely and drawn them on with Sharpies. Terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
Has she got piercings as well? Can't quite remember.
She could have a piercing.
Yeah, the old eyebrow piercing.
Eyebrow ring?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think she has an eyebrow ring, which again was very, very topical.
Well,
and of the time.
One of the two of us had an eyebrow piercing at the time.
One of the two of us did.
Who would that have been?
Well, look, I think it's fair to say that I experimented with my own late 90s, early noughties aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, when I had hair, I bleached it white blonde. And I had an eyebrow ring, which I loved because I thought it made me look like such a babe at the time. And I think it did.
Well,
and you know what? I could probably even put it back in now.
Really?
I haven't worn it for years because I think people our age should not have facial piercings.
I've just had a brilliant idea. Once we get to the finale of
Re-pierce it.
Pop Stars, I think we do a live re-piercing of your eyebrow.
Fine, let's do it. I'm totally up for it.
Oh, great. I'm going to film it, definitely. Are you good with blood? Anyway.
Yeah.
Now, someone else popped up and I was like, I know, why do I know that name? I don't know who this person is. Doesn't look familiar at all, but the name Imogen Bailey just went like, ding, I'm supposed to know who that is. And you're the person to ask about these things, so...
Quite right.
Why?
I appreciate that you have come to me with this particular conundrum. Imogen Bailey, heavily underrated human. She was at the time just auditioning for pop stars, but she went on to actually have a fairly successful career as a model. You know, she did a lot of the FHMs and Ralph magazines and those sorts of things, and swimsuit modeling. And she was on Celebrity Big Brother. I think really that's probably where you might know her from.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know, 2004, 2005 or something, there was a series of Celebrity Big Brother in Australia, and she had already become quite successful for her modeling. And so she was on that and had some prominence after that. And I think she had a couple of other television hosting roles later in her career and also released a couple of dance singles. Of course, I have them on CD single myself. But I forgot she was on this show as well. So to see her, I was quite excited to have realized that I was an Imogen Bailey fan before I was an Imogen Bailey fan. So that excited me, actually.
I'm glad you cleared that up because my first thought was she on Wheel of Fortune spinning the letters around? Was that her after Adriana?
No, after Adriana Xenity.
Yeah.
No, I don't know who that was. Was somebody else.
Oh, right. Okay.
Wasn't that Lavinia Nixon?
Yes, it was. Okay.
Another person. But Lavinia Nixon is a completely different person. Also a treasure, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Totally different person.
Yeah. Speaking of treasures, one of my favorite, like the one kind of actually funny contestant is, she's called like Jemaine, I think, Kaya or something like that, from the Gold Coast. Mm. And she just like, she shouts. Yeah, she shouts.
Just shouting. It's so strange.
Yeah, you can hear her voice like cracking and, you know, going off. And
then, it's terrible. And she does it. She does like bits of every song because clearly she doesn't know enough of each of one song. She's just doing like a line of every song. And she just keeps walking around the audition room.
She like walks off into the back corner.
Oh, she just disappears. And she sort of walks straight through the judges and they're just like, huh? And she's waving some kind of like scarf around in the air or some kind of bandana or something. I don't know if it's all in an attempt to sort of distract from the fact that, you know, she doesn't have a fucking clue what she's saying. And it's probably just to be like, oh, look at me. I've got stage presence.
Yeah.
And then she just goes back in the line and she's like, and scene, done.
But luckily her family are there to support her.
So
I knew you'd love these two.
So her family are there to support her, and you know, it's the only bit, this little sequence is the only bit in that first episode that really kind of looks like reality television today, where the audio of her singing plays over the top of the footage, and then it cuts from footage of her while the audio is playing, to footage of her mum and grandmother being interviewed, back to her and back to the mum and the grandma, et cetera, et cetera. And the mum is sort of sitting there and she says something to the effect of, oh, we've always believed in Jemaine. We've always believed in Jemaine. We've got the three generations here. We've got the grandma, we've got moi, and we've got Jemaine, and I've always believed in her talents. I just think she's just so talented. I screamed. I can't even tell you. I screamed. Moi. We've got the three generations, grandma, moi, and Jemaine. Oh, my God. It was the best.
Yeah, you can see she's...
And she's fully convinced, too. She's like, moi. And she kind of, like, has this, like, demure pose where the hand goes up to her décolleté. It's like, moi. And she's kind of, like, smizing at the camera. And it's like, oh, my God, lady, you don't even get it. This is so funny.
It's like she was practicing it in the salon as she was getting her bouffant done beforehand. I'm going to be on TV. What am I going to say?
When she does it, she's like... It's for the camera. It's totally for the camera. It's like, we've got grandma, we've got moi, and we've got Jemaine. And I'm like, doll, it's really not about you.
Yeah.
It's about your daughter, who is a fucking mess like you.
Yeah.
But it's a lot. It's so funny.
And meanwhile, grandma's sitting there catatonic, needing her
feeding. She
has
no fucking clue what's going on. She's just sitting there. She's like, where the fuck am I?
Yeah.
She doesn't know why all these people are around, why all these weird girls half-dressed singing the same bit of song over and over again. To the grandma, this is bloody Groundhog Day. She hasn't got a clue what's going on.
And then we've got...
Also, just a side note before you carry on. Who takes their grandmother to an audition? You can tell how furious I am about this because my voice just went up seven octaves. Yeah. Who takes their grandmother to an audition?
Yeah.
I don't take anybody to an audition.
No.
Grow a pair of balls and go yourself.
Yeah. Like if you were at a job interview and just, oh, this is my uncle. He's going to sit in the corner. Don't mind him.
It's so weird. So weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, there you go. That was my thought on those people.
I'm going to start using that line though. Moi.
I need moi. To start,
yeah, bring moi back. We had Nancy Z as well.
Oh,
who
bless.
Just, she, I think actually out of everyone, including the people who ended up getting into the band, I think she probably had the best voice out of everybody.
I'm going to best that statement.
Yeah.
She absolutely was the best singer. There's no question. She was so much better than everybody else. She shat all over everybody. She shat all over the girls who ultimately got in the band. Having said that, she obviously hadn't read the competition details in the application form in New Idea magazine, as they say over the narrator's voice. And then they decide, sorry, actually, you're 17, isn't she?
She keeps saying, I'm going to be 18 in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they say, look, I'm sorry, we have to...
Yeah, it's sort of like, in fairness to the other girls, we're going to have to not let you into the competition.
Uphold the rules.
And, you know, in my head, you sort of go, is that in fairness to the other girls or just in fairness to the other white girls that have turned up?
I think that's a really good question, very topical and of the moment.
Yeah.
You make a great point there, Alex. I think it's a bit of both, a bit of column A and a bit of column B, because she's unquestionably the best singer. That's the first thing.
But you couldn't put her on the cover of Ralph magazine in that time.
Not then. Well, probably not now, to be honest. I mean, well, you could. I think you could. But I'm sure Ralph magazine wouldn't. But
yeah,
certainly back then you couldn't have. And also, you know, I wonder, you know, when you actually look back on it, you kind of see that they, in the little groups of auditionees, you know, there's sort of five girls standing in a row on the spot, and then the judges actually walk down the line, and so each girl sort of sings, and you know, one of the judges goes, thanks, we've had enough, or yep, cool, keep going, or no thanks. Then the five girls go and sit over on the side of the room, and the judges have a bit of an argy-bargy, and they walk over and go, great, thanks, we're going to pick person number two and number five, the rest of you, see you later. And so you see that quite a lot, and you realize actually pretty much everybody they're picking is white and very feminine. And I also think the other obvious thing is it's not just that that's who they're picking. It's also really that's just who's turned up. When you really get some of those big scanning camera shots of like the audience or the actual group of auditionees waiting to come up and audition, it's very, very Caucasian. So I think that's also just speaks to the time of when the show was filmed in terms of, you know, inclusivity and diversity. But it certainly, it really felt quite jarring and quite out of step today to look at it 20 years
it
or
does,
21
doesn't it?
Years later.
Yeah.
Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I
mean, for the record, we're both very, very Caucasian. So maybe we should have auditioned. We might have got in ahead of Nancy Z.
Maybe we should have. Maybe we should have. And the other thing I was thinking about Nancy Zhi was, you know, sure, she was too young, but also, you know, she was an amazing singer. But really, would she have been right in a girl band? Would she have been right in a pop band? I mean, she didn't really move. She didn't really kind of have a personality. But I just kind of feel like maybe she just didn't really kind of sell it. She was a great vocalist, but she didn't really sell the performance. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think we sort of find out later in the series that there's some really intense like dance auditions as well, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, okay.
It's not like they're going to go, oh, this person's a good singer, but we're going to have to train them a bit in dance. You've already got to come in sort of as the full package, because it's all so quick, I guess. So yeah, poor Nancy, too young to be in the competition. And then we had some people who were too old to be in the competition as well. But nice kind of focus on.
Oh my gosh. I mean, another real cracker of a moment, really, in this series is it sort of goes from Nancy Z to all of a sudden, one of the cameramen is in the women's toilet.
Yeah.
Talking to two older than middle-aged women who are freshening up their lippy.
Yeah. In full leopard print.
In full leopard print. Well, one of them's in leopard print. The other one's in like some sheer blouse with a bra under it, a black bra.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And, you know, they've got one of them's wearing a choker. Both of them have teased their hair up with an inch of its life. If they stood near an open flame, it would go up like a field of straw. It would, you know, you wouldn't want to be burning. They're the kinds of women that wouldn't burn real candles. They'd have those weird little battery-operated candles because they couldn't have open flames in their home. You can just tell. And you know that just by looking at them, they smell like they would smell like Avon perfume. You just know.
Like they've covered up the smell of menthol cigarettes with Avon perfume.
They smoke a packet of Holidays a day, and they all smell like Amari Seduction available at Avon. You just know. And they're sitting in there. And one of them goes, you reckon they're going to want chicky babes then?
Her, yeah.
You reckon they're going to want chicky babes then? I don't know, babe. Don't you reckon they're going to want Chicky Babes for a girl band? I was sort of like, are you kidding me? I seriously reckon that these two women who, you know, bless them, God love them, they are dressed for a night out. They are not dressed for a daytime audition for a girl band. They are dressed to impress the men, I think.
Right.
And they are... They look like...
Do you think they've been out from the night before? Is that what you're saying?
I reckon, yeah.
No, that's why they're touching up their lipstick.
Yeah, either they've stayed out and they've just rolled in from the casino or something.
Yeah.
Or they've sort of been sitting around the corner in like the local leagues club or RSL. They've been drinking a white wine shandy and putting their pay packet for the week into the pokies. They've finished their, fish and chips with a side of tartare sauce and they've kind of gone, hey... What do you reckon all those people are lining up over there for? And the other one's gone, I don't know, Dale, let's go and check it out. And the other one's gone, great, let's go. And then they've just sort of turned up and gone, oh, let's have a crack at this, hey? You know, because they're three sheets to the wind or something from drinking the white wine shandies. They're on a buzz because they won $25 in the slot machines.
I literally haven't heard the phrase Chicky Babes since, it jumped out at me. I was like, oh, God, I remember Chicky Babes.
I love Chicky Babes. I say it all the time now. People look at me like I've got a second head.
Really?
Yeah, so funny.
Oh, dear. I did think they could both kind of sing, though.
Yeah, kind of is probably the word I'd use.
Yeah.
They kind of could sing. Yeah. They weren't appalling, but they weren't very good either.
Yeah,
The first one was okay. The second one, bloody hell, she opened her mouth to sing, and all of a sudden Barry White came out. I was like, bloody hell, where's that register come from? All of a sudden she's right down here in her boots singing this song. I'm like, geez, she smoked too much or something, that raspy voice. And you just know that after this audition, they've been like, meh, fuck it. Who gives a shit? Let's go back. I've put one of the seat holders on our seat back at the pokies.
Still got the coaster over the top of my wine.
Yeah. And you just know they've just walked back around. They've taken off their slingbacks as they've walked out, and they've just walked around barefoot, getting holes in their black opaque stockings, and they've just walked back into the RSL gone, we're back, Merv. Didn't work out, you know?
So I had a question for you. And
yeah.
You've been an actor, actress, whatever you were calling it earlier. You've actually auditioned for a reality show, but just as a working musician, because I think, you know, Jackie O sort of makes the point, it's a cattle call for people who get turned away every time they call a record company. So she's sort of hinting at it being like, it is, you know, talented, hardworking musicians who just can't get their big break. Yeah, how do you find auditions generally, I guess?
Yeah, that point that Jackie O makes about, it's an opportunity for people who can't get in touch with record companies. I mean, the reality is nobody can get in touch with record companies. I mean, really, it's so hard to really get recognized and speak to an A&R person and be listened to and be heard. And, you know, if you are fortunate enough to get in contact with somebody, you know, and you do get a record contract, you know, the amount of money that goes into producing your work – you spend the rest of your life paying off, you know, back to the record company. So it's a fair point on Jackie O's part, but I do think, not a lot of the people auditioning really had any potential future anyway, realistically, in music recording. And, you know, I've done a lot of cattle calls in my time, and that's pretty much what they're like. They're fairly brutal. And, you know, you pretty much... There's a brief. I mean, in this case, it was girls over 18 to audition for a girl band in the style of the Spice Girls, which, you know, already gives you that kind of idea that there are going to be five different sort of personalities and aesthetics and kind of predetermined characters attached to each of those successful girls. And that's what the brief was. You know, for me, you know, you would go to a brief for an audition or a cattle call before an audition, and it would be, you know, boy, guy in his 20s, brown hair, you know, off you go. And you go and you walk in and you write your name on like a white little whiteboard and you hold it up, or you would go in with a number and you go and you just basically do your very quick thing. You walk in and you say, hi, I'm Alexander Jenkins, I am here.
Is it in front of everyone like that though? Like, is it a big group of people all watching you?
No, it's not like... No. It's not like in Pop Stars where there's, you know, 300 people in the room looking at you.
Right.
It's, you know, usually it's in some kind of weird town hall or church hall or studio meeting room, and you walk in, there's like two or three people there, and you walk in, but there is a line of people. And there's like a line of other people. You just get into the door, you walk in, you stand on the X, you smile. Usually somebody takes a post takes a photo or like a Polaroid. Now they wouldn't take a Polaroid. I suppose they'd just take it on a camera phone or something. But back then they took a Polaroid. And then, you know, you maybe turn left, turn right, and then they might ask you something and they say thanks and you walk off the other side and somebody else walks in. But reality television has pretty much been the same way since pop stars. You know, yep. That's how you audition. You go in front of a shitload of people and that's how you do it. For those big, big shows, obviously shows like The Bachelor and Married at First Sight and all of those programs, they're done like with casting directors. It's a totally different thing. They're actually proper casting directors, you know, that actually seek out those particular personalities for those shows.
In a regular thing, it would be a bit more private and you're not getting told straight away, no, you're terrible, please go away, like you are in pop stars.
In some cases you are, you aren't. So in some cases you might go out and you just wait for 15 minutes and they'll come out and they'll say to you, all right, we're going to keep person A, B and D. Okay, cool. And then everyone else leaves sometimes.
Gotcha. Okay.
But generally, no. Generally you leave and your agent calls you and says to you, you know, oh, the go-see was, you know, cattle call or a go-see, same thing. The go-see was, you know, a bit of a bust, sorry. Or they say, yeah, cool, they want to see you again for a proper audition. And then you go back for an audition.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal in that it's quick and you have no time to impress anybody because really you want to kind of, you know, those people are seeing hundreds or thousands of people a day.
Yeah.
For you, it's your one shot. For them, you're like their 613th person or their 7,000th person for the day. But for you, it's your first and only time. And so the stakes are much higher for you than they are for them.
Yeah.
And it feels like that. It really does feel like that.
And do you think the percentage of people who are talented is a bit higher than it is in a pop star's cattle call? Like, I'm sure there's obviously once in a while you're standing there with people who just absolutely fluff it, but generally everyone's about even and it's just...
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going for a cattle call or a go-see in an industry, you know, like television or film or theatre where you have studied or learnt or, you know, worked in the space already, I think probably there isn't a degree of that where there is probably more talented people auditioning. To what degree of talent is, you know, completely subjective. But, you know, in this case of pop stars, thousands of girls, all they had to do was buy New Idea magazine for $2.90 and they could rip out the form, fill it in and send it in. So I don't know. I'm not sure that many talented people in inverted commas, talented people really turned up for pop stars auditions. Whereas, you know, if you are going for the role of Angel in Rent as an audition, pardon?
How did you know I'm going for that?
You wish.
I'm trying to get my upper register going again.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what that's exactly a good point. If you're going to audition for Angel in Rent, you know if you can or can't hit the notes and sing the song.
And you're probably likely to be making a living doing it anyway in some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you know if you can or can't, do an accent or if you can or can't, you know, commit to the physicality of something or the dance because, you know, if you're doing something like West Side Story, you know you're going to have to dance. You know, it's a big, big part of the job. You know, Oliver or one of these big productions that are huge. You know, whereas if you are, doing a Neighbours or a Home and Away, kind of irrelevant if you have to dance. And also those characters are so written so far out in advance, you know what they're going to be up for like 3 or 4 months out before you even start shooting.
It's a tough world.
Whereas with these girls, you know, these girls auditioning for pop stars, they're just turning up in their best bando top, learning three bars and a chorus of some song that they should know in their sleep. And they're just, you know, praying that they can impress and be the one, you know.
Yeah.
This is my moment.
I do wonder if the five that got through, I suspect most of them had already had some kind of, you know, professional career going into it.
Yeah, I think Katie Underwood seems to me, she seems to me like she must have done musical theatre or something before.
Yeah.
And Belinda Chapel, she seemed to me, I think they say that she had done some modelling.
Yeah, she's like actor/model kind of person.
Actor/model, yeah. She's a slashy.
Yeah.
But she definitely seems like she's had some of that as well. You know, theatre sort of, she's got quite a presence. And Tiffany Wood, she's got quite a presence as well.
Yeah.
I know that she doesn't really come into it officially until a little bit later.
Oh, but yeah, spoiler
alert. You can kind of tell that there is confidence and experience there. You know, they're a bit like theatre kids.
And anything we've missed? What have we missed talking about today? Anything you've got a burning desire to chat about?
Probably not. No. I've got a burning something. I don't know if it's a desire to chat about anything else. No.
I guess in that case.
But I think I can get a cream for that.
Yeah, if you're already burning up, I won't ask where. Let's wrap it up. All right. If you're enjoying Fruity Lexia so far, it's the end of our first episode. Can you believe we actually got here?
Well, at the moment, yes, but okay. Let's just see how it goes.
All right.
But yes, I can.
We'll let it settle with you for a few hours and then I'll text you at midnight tonight. So if you're enjoying our Fruity Lexia so far, and we know you are, please tell your friends about it.
We are also on Instagram, so feel free to chuck us a follow at Fruity Lexia Podcast. And if you want to show your support in the form of money, which is the only way that we want you to show your support, to be perfectly honest, hit the link in the show description and that will send you securely to Acast Supporter.
Yeah, and you can also, you know, rate us on any podcasting app as well. You know, that's if you can't afford it, then you probably shouldn't be listening, but, you know.
If you can't afford it, you don't deserve to be listening, exactly. Basically. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but if you're still listening after I just made that comment, then another way you can support us is just to rate us in whatever podcast app you're listening in, because, you know, it's all about algorithms these days. It's not about the quality of the content. It's about how many clicks you get at the bottom of it. So go and click for us. You can buy my photos on Etsy too. I'm going to put in a quick plug, Alex Hui Photography, Houy. Lots of pictures of Iceland to put up on your wall. Is there anything you want to plug other than your scalp?
Other than my hairline, no. And you know what I would not do? I would not have my hairline plugged. There is this guy that gets around here in Brisbane and he has his hair plugged and it is so unconvincing. I'm not saying it doesn't look good on some people. It does look good on some people.
Yeah.
But this particular guy looks terrible. It literally looks like he's been to Bunnings and bought some AstroTurf and that's what he's had implanted into his skull. It is so sparsely done. It looks like it looks like he's bought I don't know, some kind of clumping thrush grass or something. You know, it's just sort of clump, 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 clump. It's like,
charming.
Babe, doesn't look so great.
Yeah.
And he has it dyed yellow.
Oh.
It's not even blonde. It's in desperate need of a toner. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
So, no, nothing I want to plug. You know what I do want to plug? I'll tell you what I want to plug. I want to plug hair toner. If you got blonde hair, get your hair toned and keep it toned. There's no excuse. I don't want to see your yellow or your green sort of violet undertones. Not interested.
Okay, well, I feel like
that's my plug for the day.
We've come full circle talking about my own hair problems and we've come onto your hair problems now.
Well, not mine, everybody else's.
Exactly.
I don't have any hair to make blonde anymore.
Yeah, well, you do have a very fetching beard, which we can discuss next week.
You say fetching, I say majestic, but that's fine. I'll take it.
Bye, everybody.
See you. Can you feel it?
And I lost my train of thought, sorry. I was looking at you picking your nose.
I didn't. I scratched my nose. I just did this. I didn't even pick. That's getting edited out.
It is. Yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.